Good morning, and welcome back to Excerpts from the ABBA Archive. The podcast is not about ABBA, it's about us. My name is Dee Peterson, and with me as always is...
Hey, Kirby.
It's 2024.
Mm-hmm. Mid-20s.
We are officially in the mid-2020s. The early 2020s are over. Mm. Which is horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've played some Devil Carcassonne a couple times. Played Star Rooms with my brother. Played Suro with all seven of us. My whole family plus Nancy and George and you. Yeah, and we did New Year's together. It was really, really delightful. That whole. You had okonomiyaki for the first time.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got they let us keep the ingredients. So you like okonomiyaki Hiroshima style?
Yes, it's very good.
And it's also quite the spectacle.
Yeah, it was pretty cool to see you make them.
Yeah. My dad's way better at cooking them than I am. But, yeah, it's fun. It's an experience of a meal. Your grandfather is amazing. You've got two great grandpas. You really do.
I'm very lucky.
91 and 94.
Oof.
Yeah. And George is almost 92.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking casually about so we gave them, so I was gifted, the Lego architecture set of the Guggenheim Museum back in Christmas 2017 from my grandparents because I didn't see it that summer.
Mm.
Anyway, and since your grandfather worked at Wright, and I was like, hey, this would be a cool gift because it just needs to be on a shelf. And so I presented to him, and he's like, wow. You know, I worked on that, and I'm like, whoa. Everyone's like, what? yeah, I did some location scouting for the Guggenheim Museum.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Well, that was a very sweet gift.
Yeah, he really, really liked it. Man, I was just delightful evening. Good times with your family. We watched Tokyo Godfathers.
Mm-hmm.
This is your first Satoshi Kon film. Three others. And some shorts. And also a TV show, which I have. What did you think of Tokyo Godfathers? Set between Christmas and New Year's, so I figured now's the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very sweet movie. And pretty much the only thing I didn't like was the name.
Okay, yeah. Instead of godparents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's three...
There's three people and
parents,
one of them
and only one of
them is a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is... I think it is adapted from another story called something Godfather, like Three Godfathers or something. But yeah, you're right. It could have easily been godparents.
And maybe if there's a reference, I'm not getting that fair.
Sure, sure.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
And at best, Godfather, being one of the three.
Nah.
But
anyway, it's about three homeless folks who, on Christmas Day, discover an abandoned baby.
Mm.
And over the course of the next week, they unravel a mystery of where did this baby come from, how did we get back to its parents, et cetera, and all the while we learn about these three characters. A drunken former gambler and a teenage runaway and a trans woman. And for 2003... pretty fantastic representation.
Yeah.
She is a comedic character, and people around her are, you know, can be bigots and act bigoted, but the film is so loving.
And it's really centered around her.
Yeah.
Like, I felt, like, of the three, that it was, that she's the one, because she's the one who really wants the child, and that's kind of the driving action, so she kind of propels the story in that way.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, warm film. It's so empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it is also absolutely hilarious. The film is written in coincidences. And they just get increasingly absurd until the end years. And so by the end, when something that seems like just the most ridiculous deus ex machina, you're just like, yes, that's a satisfying, that works, because the whole movie has been about this series of coincidences.
I love how it, by establishing it, it makes it work. So instead of saying, oh, well, just take out the deus ex machina, that's too much, they're like, no, just...
We
make
built
it
to this.
All yeah. Deus ex machina.
Yeah, no, the film opens with a trans woman saying, I want to have a baby, and then she finds a baby. And the woman who she was talking to later sees her and is like, oh, there was a Christmas miracle. The trans woman had a baby. it's a great little bit. It's a Virgin Mary could get a baby. I can. Just real good time.
I love snow.
Yes, it's a great winter film. It's a great holiday film. I think it's one of, if not the only holiday film that I have. And certainly the only one that I feel like watching during the holidays. Like, this is the second time that I've watched it, between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah, and I love, because, you know, it's so outside, you know, it feels, like, very dark and snowy for most of the movie.
Yeah.
Which just makes, it feels so cozy.
Mm-hmm.
Even
though the events and people depicted are very difficult.
It's about
poverty.
And it also feels warmer in the sense that it includes all of that hardship, but it still feels warm and hopeful. And sweet.
Yeah.
Despite that.
But it never feels saccharine or like it's ignoring all of how hard this life is and how unfair and terrible this can be and how dangerous it can be.
Yeah.
It rides that line so beautifully. That's Tokyo Godfathers. We watched Showing Up Again this morning, New Year's Day. My parents had an Airbnb literally two blocks away. That was awesome. That was amazing. They sent us the address and I looked up and like, 57? Wait! The Google Maps! I see our house! Also!
Closer than QFC, which is like the
closest thing. Yeah.
As close as one could possibly be without it being.
Yeah, it is. It is literally the only thing closer is the bus stop for the 19. Going east. That is the only thing that we go to that is close. So anyway.
Yeah.
This is to say it was close.
It was very funny.
And so there was a lot of walking back and forth between the houses, which was fun.
Yeah.
So once they left their Airbnb, they all came over and we watched Showing Up. As I was recovering from being very tired. And it's not just because of New Year's, we'll get to that. Anyway. But, my mom adored it, and I'm so glad. I got Showing Up. And she loves it. She's like, it took 700 movies, but I finally found the one that's for me.
Oh.
It's like this and then Finding Nemo for her, probably.
That's such a nice compliment.
It is. And the film earns it. It's so relaxed and full of art. And I just adore it.
Yeah.
One of, if not my favorite film from last year. Kelly Reichardt.
I feel like I, in some ways, got more out of it on this viewing, in the sense that I was more used to the pacing, kind of, like...
Sure.
And
it's very relaxed.
Yeah, and that, once I knew what the story was and, like, what was going to happen, I could just, on a rewatch, sit back and relax instead of, like, have to, like, feel like I had to, like, watch all the small details to be like,
mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, I liked it. It felt more chill.
Yeah. Just off a little moment. The pigeon subplot. It was like we were back in the theater with my parents, just like laughing at all the same lines and all the same beats,
mm-hmm.
and the story just worked.
And I love the way the humor works because it.
There's no jokes. It's just situation and character.
It feels like it doesn't laugh at its own jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's playing it completely straight.
Yeah, and there's no hint of laugh track kind
mm-hmm.
of timing. It's just.
It's
yeah.
just funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, that was really nice. And we're watching Andor.
Mm.
And I did some hyping up of Andor for you. I was like, come on, best Star Wars thing.
Because I've had...
Period.
I haven't watched really much recent Star Wars stuff, but I've had pretty low expectations.
Yeah.
I'm very much like, you know, bad, just the original trilogy for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I...
And for me, it's like, I like The Last Jedi, and I haven't seen pretty much any other Star Wars.
I do like The Last Jedi,
but it's... Anyway, yeah, low expectations have been earned.
Yeah. But yeah, I love... Like, I feel like the original trilogy has this grandeur, and
mm-hmm.
this... very much the, you know, binary good versus evil,
sure.
very stylistic choices to make it, you know, like, the villains look like cool villains, and they're very, you know,
fascist,
and industrial, and stylized, and not something that we typically experience in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
So they seem very, very alien. What I love about Andor so far, one of my like favorite things about this show is how it portrays the Empire as just corporate.
Yeah.
It's not some foreign villain. It's not some faceless machine. It's not some unimaginable force. It uses the language that everyone encounters in just corporate life.
Mm-hmm.
Like this very boring, like menial, talking
yeah.
about reports.
Yeah. Fascism is the death of culture.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's just homogenization until there's nothing but numbers on the screen.
Yeah, and... Yeah, and it doesn't feel quite evil. You know, it doesn't feel like it's presenting as evil.
Mm-hmm.
It is, but it is presenting itself as just your regular humdrum.
Yeah, that's how it gets
you. Well, this is just life. It's just normal. It's just, you know, your boring job that is
mm-hmm.
actually, you know, imperialist.
It's actually awful.
Yeah.
It is dehumanization.
I love that, and I feel that, I don't know, that really adds something to the...
Yeah.
That like,
all
that
of the, all of the imperial spaces versus the town that Andor, I forget the name of the town, but well, the town that Andor lives in and the people that we see. Like, it's just such a warm community. Like, clearly there's so much history behind everything. And then there's just drab, you know, blank spaces.
Yeah.
Second go around, the thing that's standing most up to me is the writing. The dialogue just crackles. Not in like a fast talking, habit of but just like every line feels important, but it's not because of the, like, it's given with grandeur. It's not big speeches. It's just people talking with, like, I don't know, I'm not properly...
The language has a point and serves a function in the text.
Yeah, it's a great text. A discussion of why we do this. And the first three episodes are great, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the worst three episodes.
Yeah, I was impressed by the first three,
and then the next three are like, wow, and it still only gets better from here. It just gets better and more cogent and more, yeah, so we've seen half of it, doing three episodes at a time.
Speaking of these last three, and I love that...
They're like different arcs.
Yeah, and I love that this last arc, this second arc, was not blow up the Death Star, not this cool, literally explosive act. It's not a battle in this, you know, more traditional sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's payroll.
Yeah.
It's quarterly
payroll.
It's the most...
It's a bank run.
Yeah.
We need money to fund our stuff. That's it.
And they also need money, and we're...
Yeah.
Yeah. But they don't even call it, like, a bank robbery, because that would also sound kind of cool. They call it payroll, because that sounds, boring.
Yeah.
So I just love that as the goal, the mm-hmm. thing. It's not blowing something up.
And it serves as, like, here is an explicit representation of how Imperial forces are colonialist and horrible, and how they just lay it out so plainly. It is in the text. You cannot say that this is not a political show. Mm-hmm. Like, it is the most political thing, and it's so... Searing, it's so mean.
The line about how, like, oh, these, you know, we're destroying these people's lives and their culture, but these people are civilization, but they don't really have much of a civilization to destroy. Mm-hmm. And the guy just outright says that, and you're like, colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
not even gonna hide it.
I like how, I mean, when the heist goes down, that it, and things go wrong, that, like, the people that you've grown to care about, they just die.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. People just die. And not in cool ways. They don't get their big heroic moments. They just die.
Guy dies from just getting crushed by the ship taking off and rolling back on him.
Yeah, it's just, that's it. No hero moment.
It doesn't even get shot.
Yeah, it's like the scene in Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, he's still a hero, but that's war. It's just death.
Yeah. And I really like that character, the kid. Because, he's talking about, like, kind of like manifestos, you know, and very, like, the radical political idea, you know, what we would, in our world, think of as the radical political ideology kind of thing. And I love that, I don't know, but that's just...
He's sweet.
He's sweet, and he's the good guy. He's fighting
he's doing it for the cause. That's why he's doing it. No other motive.
Yeah.
He just believes in it.
Yeah, he's I don't know, the moral one, kind of between the characters and their different motivations. Yeah.
And the ones that survive will learn more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially because he seems to be a foil for the other guy who dies, who the opportunist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so excited to the next six episodes. Not to hype you up too much, but they are so good.
Yeah.
And then that freaking finale. I say that there aren't really speeches. There are going to be some speeches, but they're going to be some good speeches. Tells out show.
You want me a good speech?
Yeah. And not like, do or do not, there is no try. No, we're like, let me outline, you know, it's like the manifesto. Let me outline why fascism is horrible and why we cannot be complacent. And it's just the most brilliant. I don't want to say too much, but to
not talk around it and to not assume that the audience gets it.
This is our message.
Yeah.
Are you paying attention?
Yeah. Are we saying it loud enough for you?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I'm liking it a lot.
Yeah. Anything else happened about you?
Well, I think we're looking at it.
Oh.
Or her, I should say.
Oh.
We have a puppy.
She's asleep.
Yeah, she's in the sleep phase of her cycle.
Yeah.
River. She's 8 weeks old. And she is
a menace.
She is a menace and she is precious. She is very much a fan of biting.
She's a biter.
She's a biter.
She'll just go for feet.
Yeah.
Straight up. Doesn't matter how tall you are.
Yeah.
Mystique
is getting used to her. Kinda.
she likes her when she's asleep.
Yeah.
I think when she's awake, she's less enthused.
Yeah, she's precious. She's so tiny. So sweet. She pees a lot.
Luckily, we can predict when she will pee.
Yeah, she has a very predictable cycle. She wakes up. She goes to the bathroom. She eats and drinks. She runs around a lot and is aggressive and whines whenever we're not paying attention to her. And then eventually, she'll just all of a sudden calm down and go to sleep again. Repeat.
Forever.
And no, this does not stop at night. The running around phases are much shorter, but the cycle continues at night, and so I have been getting very little sleep the past couple days.
I just get, like, vague, weird memories of, like, people running, like, over my head and just on me. Yeah, and she's a good cuddle buddy when she's sleeping.
Yes, yeah. When she's calmed down, she is the best cuddler. And you cannot pin her down to save your life when she is on the other end of that call. She also yells when she comes up to a ledge that's too high for her to jump off. She'll just get mad. Start growling.
As if the ledge is an enemy that she can intimidate.